Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. We always say it, but we really mean it. It's wonderful to know you're there, and we get such sweet letters.
Well, you said last time that is there anything on the Instagram? And I was like, no, nothing on the Instagram. Anyway, lots of people have written to us. A lady wrote, let me check now what she said. She said something specially for you.
Oh, crikey.
What was it?
I don't know, darling.
In the past 2 weeks, your dad has asked if there's anything new on Instagram. Tell him, Stacy in Eastern Kentucky sends greetings to you both. We are just coming out of a week of three terrible winter ice and snowstorms. Electricity was out for 6 days during the storms. Many roads were too icy to drive on. Many people that did not have backup sources of heat had to leave homes to stay with family and friends, which is what I did. I had Epps downloaded of your podcast, which I was able to catch up.
How well, I do sympathise. That storms did look dreadful.
Yeah, really bad.
Really bad. And, we had about a week of cold weather, and I don't think, we didn't lose power.
Have you ever lost power due to bad weather, Dad?
Yeah, oh yes. Certainly, we did when we were in the country. We used to lose it regularly.
Did we?
Yeah.
I remember flooding. I remember it snowing. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I do remember the power going out quite frequently. Yeah, my God, maybe from wind and storms.
Yes, it used to go out on a regular basis. Mm. But not really very much in London. The last time I really remember power cuts in London was 1972.
Which was the winter of discontent.
Well, no, that was later. That was 78-9. But in 72, there was a whole series of strikes and rolling lockdowns, rolling power cuts. It was anyway, I do sympathise. I'm so sorry. I hope this thing's a bit better with you now.
Also, I posted a picture to let everybody know that we've put all of our episodes back up and available to everyone.
That I did see. I had a little look at that.
Oh, you saw, because you have our Instagram.
Yeah, I looked at that.
And lots of nice comments from people. Geoffrey is so dapper. See that one?
No, well, I don't really always know how to get them.
No, you don't, do you? Thank you, Elaine, for saying Geoffrey's so dapper. So we have had some messages. And also, I think that the episode we're going to do is from a message, a recentish message, isn't it?
The second one.
No, they both are.
They both are. Okay, fine. I've done the first before.
The first one is the... Is it too soon to tell? I mean, it doesn't matter. It's our podcast. Which one? What are we doing today?
We're doing Marc Dutroux.
Yeah. And so I'm pretty sure that a nice lady from Iceland asked us to do this. Sigrun. Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening from Iceland.
Yes.
We were very thrilled, weren't we?
We are.
She wrote, she says, "I love the podcast. I have a suggestion. I'd really like to hear your take on Marc Dutroux, the Belgian child killer. Anyway, big fan of the podcast, listening all the way from somewhere I can't pronounce, I do apologise. In Iceland.
In Iceland, yes. Well, I've never been to Iceland. Quite a lot of quite good Icelandic crime writers.
Yeah, it's a good place for a noir, isn't it? Because it's dark a lot of the time.
It's dark a lot of the time, but also it's got a kind of very strange, rugged
terrain. Yeah.
The only place
they film a lot of sci-fi stuff there.
Yeah. The only thing that goes along with it, in my mind, is Alaska. Remember that wonderful film with Al Pacino and Robin Williams called Can't Sleep, or Insomnia?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which captured that remoteness so vividly.
Mm.
No one could call Betsy remote. Could
Betsy just come up to ask for attention, which she does sporadically all the way through the record.
Yes,
Betsy.
It keeps our feet on the ground.
Can you go in your bed, please?
Literally.
Betsy went to the groomers yesterday, so she's looking a bit fluffy.
Oh, well, she always looks good.
But it's
very, very good of you to suggest. And do, please, what are we doing this week? We're doing another Crime Con book club.
Jeffrey's doing a Crime Con book club tomorrow, if you're listening.
No,
to
Tuesday.
Yeah, well, by the time this comes out on Monday, it will be tomorrow.
Tomorrow, sorry.
You're starting doing some filming again, aren't you?
I am, yes. Back to the world's most evil killers and Britain's most evil killers.
Back to the grindstone?
No, I'm delighted. It's wonderful to be working. All good stuff, to be honest. I mean, as we've said to each other before, one of the fascinating things about this is how enthusiastic people are.
I know. I was going to say that this particular subject that we're going to do is about children, which we are always a bit funny. Well, it's a tricky one. But when we talk to other people about things they might be interested in, i.e. like in production companies, they're always like, no children. But all of you listeners are like, can you tell us about this?
Yeah, it is interesting. I had a taxi driver this week who, believe it or not, he one of five brothers, and his brother was in prison for murder.
No way.
Mm. And Eve loves true crime. Mm. Oh, he watches it all the time. He said that was the only brother that was no good. All the other brothers are wonderful. It's just one of those extraordinary things.
There you go.
He'd been an armed robber, so it wasn't exactly a big jump. But I do find it. I mean, in many ways, it's wonderful because so many people want to listen, and so many people want to try and make films, and they do. But it is. In a way, it reveals something about the human condition. Mm. And human curiosity.
And on that note.
And on that note.
What are we calling this then?
Well, you can call it a number of things. The man's name is Marc Dutroux, and he's variously been called, but most often called, the Monster of Belgium.
Well, let's call it the Monster of Belgium.
I have to say, the case of Marc Dutroux really does make my blood run cold. And I'm always quite difficult to shock, but this one, I'm afraid, I've done it a couple of times and it really is not pleasant. So I'm sorry about this, and I will endeavour not to make it even worse than it needs be by hyperbole. So let's begin at the beginning. Marc Dutroux was born in November 1956. His parents were both teachers, and they left Belgium to go to the Belgian Congo.
Where's that?
It's now called the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Oh, I see. Was it a Belgian...
Yes, colony.
Colony of
yes.
Belgium.
Yeah. It's West Africa.
Yeah.
In the bulge, so to speak.
Yeah.
Big, big country. Anyway, they came back to Belgium. The parents were called Victor and Janine. Rowed a lot and divorced in 1971, and at that point Dutroux left home. He was 15 going on 16, and really, not untypically in this kind of case, started drifting around and became a male sex worker. In fact, he married, believe it or not, in 1976, the first time, a girl called Françoise, and they had two children. But he was abusive to his wife, beat her, and was persistently unfaithful. And they separated in the early 1980s and were eventually divorced in 1983. Indeed, one of his mistresses was a girl called Michelle Martin, who he ended up marrying in 1989 when, believe it or not, they were both in prison. This is a dark story. But he had an appetite. Dutroux had an appetite. No one can put their finger on exactly why or where it came from. But he had an appetite for abducting, imprisoning and raping young girls. In December 1985, when, remember, he was only 20, he and another, and I'm not going to name all the accomplices because there are lots and lots and lots of them and it gets very confusing.
Was that like one of his MOs to kind of find someone to help him do the...
Yes, but often it was his wife.
Oh, charming.
Yeah.
Good.
They abducted a girl called Axel and then again a girl called Elizabeth. They throughout 1985, they went through a period of abducted girls. Now, we cannot be sure how many, because some of the girls simply disappeared. And here becomes part of the darkness of the story. Many people allege, but it's never been proven, that Dutroux was a minor player in a major paedophile ring, and they were trafficking young girls. It's long held over this story as the untold truth about Dutroux. There were at one point a series of witnesses called the X-witnesses. They were never allowed to be named. They were called X1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And none of their statements ever came to court because they were described as unbelievable. Many of the things that Dutroux did were indeed unbelievable. So by the time we get to the end of the beginning of 1986, they've abducted probably eight girls, young girls. Some of them as young as 9, some as old as 13 or 14. Eventually, Dutroux and his wife and one of the male accomplices were arrested. After he'd given information, Jean, this is the accomplice, had given information to the police. Eventually, Dutroux was convicted in April 1989 and was given 13 and a half years in prison. He was also incidentally convicted of a particularly brutal robbery of a 58-year-old woman. Martine, his wife, got 5 years. All the offences were committed with an accomplice, Martine or whomever else. But let's put it this way. Dutroux didn't serve 13 and a half years in prison. Quite the opposite. For reasons that still remain shadowy, he's released after 3 years.
3 years?
Yes. Now, that plays to some of the conspiracy theories because he was released on the instructions of the Justice Minister at the time.
Okay. So the big potential sex ring had connections in high places.
Had connections in high places. And that comes, and again, none of this has ever been proved. There is no doubt, however, that that release played a significant part in the crimes that were to come. What was driving Dutroux? He's a drifter. He's got really not very much money. And yet somehow he seems to be accumulating houses. He lives in Charleroi in quite a big house. And he's got 6 or 7 other houses. Now, how is he affording that? It later emerges that his wife's bank account keeps receiving large amounts from all sorts of places around the world, including Saudi Arabia and the United States. Now, you can put 2 and 2 together and get 4, or you can get 9. I mean, is he selling girls?
So he could be selling girls or images or sorts
or
of
both.
Things.
What's undoubtedly true is that he was selling cars. He was a great car thief as well. And he would transport them to Slovakia and across Europe. So you've got a man who's living on the edge of crime, has no real income, and yet appears to be incredibly wealthy and, well, one probably has to say, well connected. Otherwise, how come he gets out of jail so speedily in spite of having 13 and a half year sentence? It is, to put it politely, bizarre. But in the house in Charleroi, which I do recommend, do have a look at if you get a moment on it, it comes up. If you look at it on Google or any of the usual search engines, it's a big house, double fronted, and it's got a big garden. In fact, he's got such a big garden that he constructs a swimming pool in the garden. We are discussing someone who, you might say, lives well.
Quite showy.
He also constructs, however, beneath the swimming pool, a concealed dungeon, which is about 7 feet long, 3 feet wide and 5 feet high. He invites people round to share his swimming pool.
With the dungeon underneath.
Yes, but they don't know there's a dungeon underneath.
That's so gross.
So he's released. His mother, Dutroux's mother, who's separated, of course, now and divorced from his father, his mother writes to the police and says, my son, Mark, is constructing a dungeon underneath the garden. No response. She writes a second letter. My son Mark is constructing a dungeon underneath his house in the garden. Still no response. Well, he goes to see a psychiatrist and persuades him that he's mentally disabled, so he should get a state pension of about $1,200 a month. And he wants plenty of sedatives, which, of course, he then uses for other purposes. This is almost too much sometimes to bear, this story. I was reliving it this week, doing the research again, and it is chilling. On the 24th of June, 1995, Dutroux abducts two eight-year-olds, Julie Lejeune and Melissa Rousseau. They were kidnapped and put in the dungeon. He attacked them persistently, filmed himself, sold films of what he was doing to these two young girls, and kept them in the dungeon. In August, 3 months later, he abducts two older girls, Anne Marshall and Eshi Labrelle, I hope I've pronounced that correctly. But they were kept in the bedroom because there was no room in the cellar or the dungeon. Again, they're kept for some time. In September 1995, he decides the two girls in the bedroom are surplus to requirements and kills them and buries them in black bin liners in a hole he's dug. The two eight-year-olds are still in the dungeon. He's then arrested for car theft and given 3 months in prison. He instructs his wife, Micheline, to feed the girls in the dungeon, but she says later, I was too afraid to go down there.
So she just lets them starve to death?
They starve to death.
That's so horrendous.
It is not a pleasant story, this. There's no way I can dress it up. But let's put it this way. There are so many imponderables that we will get to when we start to talk about what happened after he's finally arrested. In May 96, a matter of months after his release, Dutroux kidnapped a girl, 12-year-old, called Sabine Dardenne, on her way to school. And he kept her in the dungeon because by this time, of course, it was free, so to speak, the two eight-year-olds having died, for 80 days. Starved her, raped her repeatedly, made films of her. And on the 9th of August, just a few months later, he kidnapped another girl, this one called Leticia Delos, on her way home from the swimming pool. But this time, thank goodness, an eyewitness saw them and identified the van. Basically, they used to throw them into a van. And Dutroux is caught. A matter of 2 days later, he confesses to a number of killings. He confesses to the killings of the bodies buried in the bags. The last two abductees are found alive, thank goodness, in the house. And he also admits to killing one of his accomplices, who he thought was about to turn him into the police, a man called Weinstein. He took the police to another house where the young girls, the 8-year-olds' bodies, were found buried in the garden.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Another of his houses. He confesses to the killings of the bodies in the garden. He confesses to the killings of the young girls. Two of the victims are found alive, thank goodness. But amazingly, and it is amazing, nothing much seems to happen. There was a whole series in the Belgian justice system involves an investigating judge. In other words, has to assess the evidence about when it comes to trial, whether it comes to trial or not. And at least one investigating judge is booted off the case. Now,
I think that's to do with his contacts.
People have speculated that could have something to do with his contacts. One thing is absolutely clear, that Dutroux's case, which was an absolute sensation at the time, not just in Belgium, I can remember it well, causes a thing called the White March of 300,000 Belgians in Brussels in October 96, a protest against why isn't Dutroux being brought to justice.
Oh my goodness, how amazing.
The judge, then the new investigating judge, has to have protection. I mean, this case has caused a sensation.
Especially because he was let out and everyone would know that, and then went on to yes. do such awful things, more awful things.
Well, among the many reasons for this, and some of these are heartbreaking, Dutroux told a police informant that he was constructing a cell, but that information seemed, you know, a dungeon, that information never seemed to get through. His mother's two letters never seemed to get through. Even better, when he's in jail for the car thefts and the 2 8-year-olds are still in the cellar, in the dungeon, the police search the house. They take with him a locksmith. They search it on December the 13th and December the 19th, 1995. The locksmith hears screams and says, I'm not leaving here until we find out where they're coming from. I think they're coming from the house. And the officer says, who's the policeman here, you or me?
No.
And they leave. Now, make of it what you will, but...
It feels like something corrupt going on.
Yes.
Oh, that really grosses me out.
And... There were tapes found, videotapes were found, which showed Dutroux constructing his dungeon, but the police never looked at them. It all adds up, in retrospect, to a conspiracy.
It can't just be lazy policing.
Well, an official report in 1998...
Feels too lazy.
Called it corruption, sloppiness, and incompetence. Mm.
Well, the thing is, sometimes those big, I mean, I'm not sure, but those big paedophile rings and stuff can have very powerful people in them, can't they?
Indeed they can. Operation Midland attempted to prove it was the case in this country and conspicuously failed. There were all sorts of connections. The judge in the case is a connection to a friend of Dutroux's, who's a very powerful businessman, who's eventually not convicted of anything to do with the paedophile ring, but something else entirely, goes to jail for 5 years, gets out, and is now dead. He died, natural causes. Seven law enforcement officers are arrested of suspicion in connection with Dutroux. None of them were charged. There was an occult sex ring, believe it or not, called Abrasex. Quite well financed. At least four policemen were members of it. It was in Charleroi, where Dutroux was primarily based. And girls aged between 2 and 20 were given to the high priestess as part of the cults. This is a...
What is going on in Belgium?
There have been countless descriptions of orgies involving powerful men, sadism, torture, and, of course, murder.
How big is Belgium?
Oh, good question.
I shall use the handy interweb.
So we get to 2000, and remember, he's arrested in 1996, and still Dutroux has not come to trial. The Financial Times reports in September 2000, it's one of the subjects that you can't talk about in German, you can't talk about in Belgium, because nothing stands up to scrutiny. The press won't follow it up, and yet this is two government ministers resigned following a temporary escape from custody by Dutroux in 98, and he's still not been brought to trial. It is almost astounding. In fact, it is astounding. Dutroux doesn't, in fact, go on trial until the 1st of March 2004. 7.5 years after his arrest. He's only charged with 3 murders, and he denies the killing of the 3 he's charged with, but confesses to abduction.
What about rape?
He insists, as his defence, that he's part of a Europe-wide paedophile ring. I fear the jury are not convinced, but I'll come back to that in a minute. Because on the 22nd of June 2004... he's given life, and his wife is given 30 years. In 2012, his wife is released after only 8 years. And in 2013, Dutroux asked to be released, but was refused. He's in solitary confinement. In fact, he isn't now. There is a current story in the Brussels Times saying he's complaining. He's gone on strike as a prison cleaner because he isn't being paid enough.
I'm surprised people haven't tried to kill him.
Well, he's said to have considerable protection.
Oh, of course, if he's part of, like...
Yeah, I mean, you are talking about a scandal that... Well, to say it stains Belgium It's harsh, but there is no doubt that something very odd was going on. But of course, a lot of people are very happy to pin all the blame on Marc Dutroux because he can take the rap and everyone else can walk away.
And they haven't done further investigation into it.
Nope.
It just makes you think it just must go high up somewhere, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly gives the impression, given the fact that he seemed to get away with it and then he wasn't brought to trial and then the investigating judges were, released. And it's one of those stories that makes the blood run cold. Because he treated these poor innocents in the most dreadful, cavalier, depraved manner. And there's nothing There's not a shred, no shred of remorse. He's never expressed any remorse or regret or anything else. Said, oh, I was just doing it. Now, was he selling girls? Was he transporting girls across Europe? Was he transporting girls to the, you know, the Middle East? What was he doing? What was happening? We really, really don't know. And the only person we could ask, of course, is Marc Dutroux, who is, of course, still in prison in Belgium. Though, if this is any interest, he's due for a pre-parole hearing this year. He was due for one last year, but it was prevented by COVID.
And I hope he doesn't get it.
Well, nothing would surprise me. It's very interesting that the Belgians...
anyone sounds like they would commit the crime again, it sounds like him to me.
Yes, I think that's true. But remember, he's only 64.
Mm, I know, that's my worry. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that a third of Belgians with the name Dutroux, who shared the surname Dutroux, changed their name between 1906 and 1998.
A third
of Belgians,
wow,
with the name Dutroux changed their names.
The association is so dreadful.
Yes. I mean, to say it sent a shudder down the spine of the country is an understatement. It was a... Betsy is being particularly affectionate today, which means I have to keep bending away from the microphone, which
Betsy,
slightly affects the time.
Come on, enough.
but actually, we need a little light relief because this is such a dark story.
Mm.
And I would not be at all surprised to see Marc Dutroux be released, nor would I be surprised if he didn't change his name and disappear. As I say, if you have a look at the quite a recent cutting in the Brussels Times, you'll see a current picture of him. He looks a little more pasty than he did in the earlier pictures. He looked rather handsome in the earlier pictures. But, of course, there was no concept of a death penalty because Belgium had abolished the death penalty. So Dutroux is...
It's so interesting, isn't it? Such a... We talked at length last week about... No, I can't remember his name, who was in prison in solitary confinement for 42 years for something that feels like not that any crime is or murder isn't, you know, bad, but like it felt like there was some justification or, you know, potential justification for it. Whereas this guy has hardly been in prison at all. And there's like video footage of him committing crimes that are so heinous.
Yes.
Why is the judicial system?
Is that liberal democracy at work?
Why is the world the way it is?
And why wasn't? I mean, if you look at what happened, for example, look at the paedophile rings in Bradford, or you know, the whole sex trafficking rings we've exposed in this country that went to enormous lengths.
Well, we really have exposed them and did a lot of work on it.
A lot, and you know they. They do exist, and it's not a fantasy. It's not a figment of anyone's imagination. They absolutely do exist, and they can be horrifying. And there's particular attitudes, but this was not in a minority community. He was kidnapping white girls, and he was keeping them, and other white girls were disappearing, and it is one of those cases that I find deeply, deeply troubling, because there are so many unanswered questions. Why wasn't he brought to trial more quickly? Why was he allowed out so soon? Why didn't the police actually, when they heard the screams in the house, why on earth didn't they go back?
Mm.
Who was protecting who? What does Abrasachs have to do with it? You know, this occult group. It's just surrounded by questions, and at the moment the man taking the rap, of course, he's divorced from his wife in 2003, and then she disappeared. I don't know. It's very, very troubling. the accusations of torture and rings and murder and black magic, they don't go away. They're still there.
Mm.
And, but I think it's fair to say, as the Financial Times reported more than 20 years ago, Belgians do not like to talk about it. They regard it as a shame, a stain on the character of what they conceive as a very upright country.
But if there's a suggestion there's something that dark going on, you want to, like, get on in there and unravel it. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's like pulling a thing on a jumper.
Yes. It is.
That's not good, though. That doesn't make me feel good.
No, I'm sorry. I apologise, but we are doing it for the lady in Iceland.
I know. And I'm sure other people are interested to hear it. And also, to any listeners from Belgium, obviously, well, write to us and tell us how it is for you.
Please
do. I'd be so interested to hear
What your thoughts are. Is this all just a figment of other people's imagination and the only guilty party is Dutroux? Or is there more to it than that? And where does it stop? And where does it go? And who else is involved? It is an enigma. A series of Russian dolls, one within another. And I suspect that, as you say, it must go a long way. The tentacles must stretch a very long way.
Yeah.
Can't see how they can't. Anyway, that, for what it's worth, is the Monster of Belgium, Marc Dutroux.
Monster of Belgium, thanks, Dad.
What are you doing cheerful this week?
Not as much as you. You're the one doing all the things. The book club.
Yes.
We shall be getting back on Instagram Live.
Oh, yes. And we've got to do that case for Phil.
Yes, Patreon. That's for our Patreon.
Yeah, we've got to do a Patreon one.
We're going to do a bit of separate content for the Patreon.
Yeah.
For our long-time listener, Phil Brown.
Yes, who emailed me again this week saying, are you going to do it soon?
Okay, Phil, we're on it.
We'll get to it, Phil, I promise you.
Promise.
But otherwise, no. I mean, ironically, although there's things going on this week, there was more to do last week, but in the prep.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, true.
Once you've got the prep out of the way, you've had a slightly easier week. And the other thing I find, and we've talked about it briefly before, but I do find it sometimes quite troubling, is that there is so much darkness. And Dutroux is a particularly acute example, but, you know, there is such a lot of horror. Yeah. And you have to be very positive and uplift yourself. Don't let yourself get dragged down into the abyss.
What have you been watching to keep you keeping your spirits up?
Well, I watched Big Sky, which I thought was terrific. You'd
like, I started it and then I was on my own and I got a bit like, I got a bit scared, so
well,
I turned it off.
It's very good. And it's based on the books by a man I like very much, CJ Box.
But I will go back to it.
It's very good and it's got a great future, I think.
Mm.
But I think they really only did three eps. They didn't do very long.
Mm.
And they left it hanging. It's got a nice cast too, but it's not very cheerful.
Yeah, it was big. I was a bit like, oh, I don't think I can handle this.
Coles to Newcastle.
Yeah,
yes.
It was a bit much. I went for something a bit lighter.
Yeah, I've had some really good books this week. I reviewed the latest Stephen King called Later, which is really very about a little boy who sees dead people.
I think that's been done before.
Yes. Well, it was a movie called The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, The Sixth Sense, that's what I was going to say.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
But no, it wasn't quite like that. This is more frightening.
I remember that being quite frightening at the time.
With a great twist ending,
didn't it? It's a good film.
Yeah, very good. Bruce Willis at his best.
Bruce Willis at his absolute best.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Well, we are, you know, there's lots to look forward to. The books keep piling in.
I went on a photo shoot this week.
Oh, good for you.
A real physical. I left the house for work for the first time in nearly a year.
Well, I left the house for that job about...
Oh, Christmas time.
Viacom.
Oh, that Viacom one.
Yeah.
That wasn't. That was about 3 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that's the first time I'd been out since Christmas.
Mm. Yeah, mine was off the Caledonian Road.
Well, not too far then.
No. But it was quite nice to be out and about.
Yeah, good. Lovely.
It was a success, I think, as well.
Good photographer?
Yeah, yeah. He was French. He'd come over. He'd quarantined specially to shoot one of my clients. So we were very honoured.
Oh, that's very good. That's excellent.
He was very nice and had a very good team. The whole team, actually, were all very lovely and it made the whole thing very easy, which is really nice.
Ah, that's nice. Nice to hear that. And it'd be nice. It's nice to get back, even if it is socially distanced and you can't shake hands and, you know, you've got to wear a mask until the camera's rolling and all that. It's still nice to get a bit of interaction.
Yeah, it was nice.
Because there's no doubt that the third lockdown has been the hardest.
Yeah.
For everybody.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But we must look forward to April or May or whenever.
Whenever it is.
Whenever it
when
is.
When we're allowed out. Mm. All right, super. Well, thank you very much, Dad. As usual, want to say thank you to all the people who help us. Our producer, Sam Brain, who does everything and is amazing. My brother, Dan, who did the music. My friend, George, who drew our caricature. To Audio Boom for hosting us. To Jeffrey for doing all the hard work. And to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Yes, well, as I always say at this point, I must thank Molly because this was her idea. At that point, I didn't know what a podcast was. Now everybody seems to have a podcast. It's amazing. And it is a privilege to talk to you and to discuss what really are sometimes quite hard cases. And as I often say, bad things happen to good people, so too, please be careful out there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.